Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'm Melody Cederstrom, and you are listening to Financial Survival. We're going to be checking to see if what our quality of sound audio is coming through, because what I heard wasn't too good. So I hope the listening audience, it's okay for you, but we'll find out here in a bit. But we will continue as though we are being broadcast just crystal clear. I'm here with my co-host Alfred Adesk, and we're going to bring to you our opinion and commentaries on today's economic and political events for this fine Monday afternoon of June 3rd, 2013. But first, let's get started with the market report with gold. I'm sure everybody is just a little tickled pink because we had a little bit of an up day in gold today. We have gold up $23.50, bringing it to $14.12. We have silver up $47 at $22.83. Platinum was up $42 at $15.03. And you also have palladium up $7 at $761. On the USDX today, took a beating today, down 0.62. at 82.65, and you have crude oil creeping back up 1.35 at 93.32. I don't know why folks find it difficult to figure out what the markets and where they need to be, because you're going to have pressure on the dollar, you're going to have oil prices at these higher levels, and then the long-term fundamentals for gold and silver are higher, and it really is that simple. The world is falling apart as we speak. It's just that mainstream media refuses to tell you and show you what is really happening around the world. So fundamentals are there. They haven't changed. They're going to continue to worsen as we see things unfold around here and around the globe. The markets, the paper markets today. Hey, I make my point. The Dow up 138 points today at 15,254. NASDAQ up 9 at 34.65. S&P up 10 at 16.40. The 10-year yield, that's down just a little bit, 0.03 at 2.13. So you had a little bit of recovery from Friday's sell-off of down over 200 points. That was actually a 300-point swing on the day. And we have it there. The manufacturing came out. They say, surprise, the manufacturing downturn is holding back the U.S. growth. And, of course, they had the U.S. unexpectedly It wasn't unexpectedly, but that's what they say. Shrank in May at the fastest pace in 4 years, showing slowdowns in business and government spending are holding back the world's largest economy. Across the board, the federal budget cuts in overseas markets that are struggling to rebound will probably continue to curb manufacturing, which accounts for about 12% of the economy. The other 70% of the economy depends on consumer spending. And how can they spend if they don't have jobs? Good afternoon, Al.
Hello, Melody. What up?
Crazy, wacky day.
Well, interesting day. They're all interesting days. We will not die of boredom. I've been saying it for several years. Whatever gets us, it won't be boredom. We're going to be interested in the world whether we want to be or we're not. We don't want to be. We're still going to be interested. It might be you'd like to escape, but you can't. You're going to have to deal with it. Right? It's part of our destiny. It's part of our fate. And some people think we chose. Each of us chooses our, before we're actually born, we choose the life we're going to have. Kind of know about it in advance. Then you're born and you forget. It's all a mystery to you, but
well,
we are, and if that's true, you chose this, Melody.
Well, there's actually those who say we actually choose our parents. We get to choose our parents.
Well, you know what that proves, don't you? It proves that it's possible to get drunk in heaven or wherever we came from before we were born. Because some of us make some fairly bad choices.
I don't know. For what?
I must have been drunk. I must have been a drunk before I was ever even born, Melody. It's hard to say. Because I made some wild, hard to justify those choices.
I chose well.
All right. Well, that's good. What do we got for today, Melody? What are we going to?
A lot of crazy things going on. Again, the markets are up strong today, but car sales. They came out with a report prior to the program today, and it shows that most of your car sales are higher. The overall industry in the U.S. came in a little bit higher, up 8% from a year ago, but you also have to remember that it's still not quite back to where it was. But, you know, what was interesting about the whole report that I read wasn't so much about the number of cars that they were selling, but what caught my attention was pretty much anybody can buy a new car, that the credit is flowing. It doesn't matter if your credit is poor. You're pretty much going to get the good rate, just as the people who work hard and keep their credit strong. So I found that interesting. They need to sell these cars.
Yeah,
so they're going to give them to anybody. And, you know, with folks having the problems that are, you know, that are overspend and the job situation as it is and what we face in the future, again, where is a good economy?
Well, it's not immediately apparent, that's for sure, and doesn't look like it's going to turn up anytime soon. What we're really dealing with, I mean, legitimately, Paul Krugman, the economist who has certainly achieved a great deal of fame or notoriety. I don't necessarily agree with a lot of things he writes, but won a Nobel Prize for economics and so on. Krugman, back in April 28th, he wrote in one of his articles in the New York Times, he described our economic condition since 2008 as being a depression. Right? And he used the word depression in his article. And not many people seemed to catch it or didn't seem to be much, you know, controversy about that statement. But here's Krugman, and he said, no, we haven't been, he didn't elaborate, but he did use the word. And that's a remarkable political statement from a man like Krugman. He said, no, we're in a depression. And I think there's a good case to be made for that. I think there's a good case to be made that we really are. We're certainly not in a recovery. Anyone who looks at it knows we have to be in a recession, and it's arguable, and many of us who look at it anticipate that we may be headed for a depression. And here's Krugman, he says, no, we're already there. He's willing to use that word, and that's no small thing for a man in his position with his stature, writing the New York Times. That was an extraordinary word choice. It went right past virtually everybody. No one seemed to think much about it, but it impresses me. So we've got two forces at work right now. We have the natural force of the economy, in my opinion, which is pushing us to or deeper into a depression. And then we have the government that's doing everything it can to inflate the currency in order to stimulate the economy and to avoid the depression. And it will be interesting to see. We've got something like the immovable object meeting the irresistible force. And it will be interesting to see which one will prevail. Where do you think we're going? Do you think government will be able to stimulate us away from a depression? Will they succeed? I mean, they've had some success. The country hasn't collapsed. We're getting along. But technically, are we in a depression, and are we going to go deeper into it, or will government prevail with its inflationary policies?
Well, they succeeded in keeping the banks functional.
Yeah.
That's what they've succeeded in. As far as any success in improving the conditions of people's livelihoods, no. They have failed, and I think they have failed miserably. I don't think there's been any improvement. And in fact, again, we talk about confidence. Even in that same report about the automobiles, the string of record stock markets, they say, during the month is one factor. The one factor that is driving the sales is the stock market. The record stock market highs is what's, I mean.
And what's driving the record stock market highs? Yeah.
The government.
No, what do you think is pushing the market up?
The government.
I understand. It's basically just a bubble that's been created by government throwing $85 billion a month into the economy.
Mm-hmm.
Or at least that's what a lot of people believe. There doesn't appear to be good evidence to support the rising prices in the stock market. The economy's not rebounding. We don't see. People are all of a sudden buying their second and third car and a new house or whatever. So it's been artificially stimulated, and it creates an illusion. And that illusion is enough for some people to think we are having a recovery, or we might be having a recovery, but reality doesn't support that. Objective reality doesn't support that idea.
And often I wondered, even in these reporting, it's like, okay, so you say that the stock market is fueling, you know, making people feel good so they go out thinking that the economy is improving. But if you're loaning to anybody and everybody, these quote-unquote anybodies and everybodies know that the economy is not getting better, how can they go out and buy a car?
I don't know. It's, you know, not everybody's broke. It's not a question where everyone is broke. Some people are doing well. I get that.
Mm-hmm.
It's not as if everyone is in a depression. Some people are quite successful right now. Up at the top end of the economic strata, I don't know, top 5% are doing great, maybe even 10% doing great. The other 90% are hanging on, or perhaps at the bottom end, suffering. And we have to wonder how long can a significant number of people be unemployed and go through whatever sort of stress is attached to being unemployed? How long can that continue before we see some serious political repercussions? What's going to happen? Yeah, things are certainly unstable. And here's an interview from Egon von Graerz, who is, he started Matterhorn Asset Management out of Switzerland, and he is interviewed on a pretty regular basis on radio programs. And here's one of his quotes in a recent interview. He says, "Just look at what's happening in the physical gold market. The London Bullion Market Association reported record gold transactions in April of plus 25%. This is the highest level since gold peaked in September 2011. So physical trading is at the same level where it was when gold was at its peak of $1,900 an ounce. That's extraordinary. And the level of physical gold trading is incredible. We are seeing the same activity now as when gold was at its peak, and it proves that all of the selling is in the paper market." And he goes on, he says, remember, these were April figures. We've seen also refiners. We have seen, and also refiners have seen, much higher activity in May. So demand is even greater right now. He was giving April figures. Here we are in June. I believe we've seen the gold market finally turn to the upside. It's possible to see some consolidation before gold takes off, but the real move, when it starts, and it won't be far away, will be massive. He's, of course, optimistic that gold is going up, and he's making the point that people are buying massively, but on the international market. Right? People buy, countries, central banks, big players are buying gold around the globe. Here in the United States, gold sales are more subdued. People have not yet grabbed on to the fundamentals that are being seen globally. People in positions to know about these things, people in central banks, people in governments, they're sitting back and say, get some gold, Bubba, we got to get some gold. And they're trying to grab hold as much as they can at the prices that exist. Ordinary people, at least in this country, have not really joined that pursuit. Right? They're not just buying and buying and buying as much as quickly as they can lay hands on it. The implication is that people in foreign countries, foreign central banks, foreign governments, they know where things are headed. And they're like, they agree. If they were listening, they would agree with the ideas we espouse on this program. They'd be sitting back and say, yep, gold's going up. It's got to go up. The only question is how soon. The only question is how soon are we likely to see a significant change in the price of gold? I mean, when does the bull market really reassert itself and start to run again? And there's the big question. And if anyone has an answer to that question, and you can prove it, you call in and we'll pay you 50 cents, 50 cents for that answer. Belly, do you have the answer? Do you know when it's going to turn around and it's all going to take off like a skyrocket?
No, I think when it turns around, I think everybody will be surprised. There's been a lot of reports about the bullion banks where they have scaled back their short positions, both in gold mm-hmm. and silver, mm-hmm. With the recent price crash. Yep. And there's a lot of things that are brewing. I think maybe after the break we'll talk a little bit about Turkey. They're exploding over there. They're having massive riots over there. The whole world is just about ready to, you just feel like something's coming. You have all kinds of things going on in Syria and Israel. I've heard someone was talking to me today that Israel sent, I haven't had a chance to follow up, sent jets over somewhere so they can get to Iran. And so, I mean, if any of these reports are true, things are certainly building up. So any one of these one instances could propel gold from these levels to far above the 1900 we've been at.
I think I've seen reports similar to what you're talking about, that the gold bullion banks have liquidated their short positions hundreds of tons. They're still up for, I think I saw one report earlier today, they still are 170, 180 tons of gold that they are short on, but they were something like 900 tons of gold, and they have cut it dramatically. They've cut their shorts by, 70% or more in the last 7-8 months. We can look at those numbers, and I don't have them right here in front of me. I just glanced at them earlier today, but they imply that when those shorts are wiped out and they're no longer vulnerable to price increases in the price of gold, when those final 150, 200 tons of shorts are canceled out, it may be that that will be the moment when gold is going to start to fly. And if we can judge they've lost something like 70% of the tons and shorts that they had up in just in the last 7-8 months, it implies we've got probably another 2-3 months, and then things perhaps are going to fly dramatically. I'm Alfred Adask here with Melody Cedarstrom on Financial Survival. Going to take a break for a couple of commercial announcements. Be right back. Please stay tuned.
have denied internet access for their people during civil strife. The FCC seized in-use commercial shortwave frequencies right after the September 11th attacks. No one communication system can be depended on to be there when you need information. You need choices. You need a KU band free-to-air satellite system from AVR. The AVR system includes a receiver, an LNB, and a 75-centimeter dish. All you need to get on your own is the coaxial cable. The system is delivered to your door for $149.99. That's right, delivered for $149.99. That's the shipping and the system, $149.99. Call 541-225-4659. That's 541-225-4659. Or visit AmericanVoiceRadio.com and click Satellite System. Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family. American Voice Radio Network is heard on Galaxy 19 at 97 degrees west, transponder 23, frequency 12115, audio PID 2595. AVR is heard on the left side audio channel, and AVR 2 is heard on the right side audio channel. Remember, both AVR and AVR 2 are on Galaxy 19. Same network, double the choices.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addisk here at Financial Survival with Melody Cederstrom. And Melody is now going to let us know. I don't even know. It's going to be, I don't know, Melody. Do you have a special today or do you not?
Absolutely. We're keeping it simple and basic here at Discount Gold and Silver Trading, an AU $5 Liberty gold piece. We're also going to have a 1 ounce silver eagle. Free shipping, and we're going to keep it at the same price as last week, $535. Gold is up big today, silver is up big today, but we're keeping it the same at $535. An AU $5 Liberty gold piece, a 1 ounce silver eagle, free shipping, $535. You can buy one or 10, but you have to give us a call at 800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. And also, visit our website at DGScoins.com, DGS for discount gold, silver coins.com. Make sure you sign up for our weekly newsletter. And of course, you can listen to the archives of this program. And we're also in the process of revamping. Of course, it's not going to get done probably till the end of the month to where we can have some items up there that you'll be able to purchase. And I also want to mention, Al, tomorrow, as far as I know, I still have to reconfirm it, but we have a guest tomorrow, Jennifer, Bob Chapman's
daughter.
Tomorrow will be the one-year anniversary of Bob's passing on. And so Jennifer should be here. We don't know if she's going to be on the program for 10 minutes, 20 minutes, or for the whole program. So... We're looking.
Well, we don't know whether I'm going to be on this program for 10 minutes or 20 minutes. We don't know that either.
I guess we don't know when I'm going to be here either.
That's exactly right. There's a lot of things we don't know, so it adds a certain amount of excitement. It adds a certain amount of interest to the program when you don't know.
We'll be here, so I'm looking forward to saying Jennifer and I. We talk on a regular basis, I'm sure the listeners will be pleased to hear about an update on Jennifer and Judy and the family. So make sure you listeners tune in tomorrow. And then I guess Roger Sales will be returning the following Tuesday. Is that correct, Al?
True story.
Okay.
I want to ask you a question. What is the going price, more or less, for an MS-62? $20 Liberty, just a generic coin. There's nothing special about it. What's ballpark figure?
About $1,800.
Okay, that's what I. The reason I was asking is because I was looking on. I actually thought it was probably a little lower than that, and I was looking on eBay today, and I saw them. They were selling them for $1,830 thereabouts. I looked at half a dozen coins, and they were selling them for $1,830 thereabouts. On eBay, and I actually thought they were higher than what you might be selling them for, and I was curious. I wanted to see if that was true or false, and that's
even if anybody has volume, we can help out a little bit with volume, the coin prices are great pricing right now. They did go up today. They went up about the same amount as spot did. But what makes the $20 gold pieces so attractive, Al, is they get the play from two markets. They get the melt value play. So gold goes up 10, they go up 10. Gold goes down 10, they go down 10. But then they also get the supply and demand side. So as the demand picks up in the market and the supply diminishes because they don't mass produce them anymore like they do the modern issue coins, then that also reflects that price. So you're actually getting the play from two separate markets. What's also nice about the certified coins is that they're guaranteed. They're guaranteed to be a Mint State 61. They're guaranteed to be a Mint State 62. So you don't have anyone to doubt what you have. Someone calls me to, sell something back to me that they bought from somewhere else, I can give them a pretty good idea of what that coin will sell back into the market. Now, we take special care in picking out coins that we send to our customers. We make sure they don't have copper spots. We make sure they're really nice coins. I've seen coins from my other competitors, and sometimes the Liberty looks like she has the measles. There's so many copper spots on. So if I buy those back, I'm not going to buy them back from my competitors at the same premier price that I'll pay from our customers. So,
All right. Well, here, I've got another one.
I got a question here.
Go ahead.
This is in from Richard. If they were to revalue gold like in 1929, what would happen? Would you get maybe $5 for every one? How would this help if it was done as though it was 1920? Wouldn't prices jump also? He probably meant 1929. How does revalue...
1934 is when they revalued, didn't they? They took the gold out in 1933, and they revalued in 1934 from $20 to $35 per ounce.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I thought the question is a little bit confused.
Yeah.
First off, we are in a different circumstance today than we were back in the 1930s. And the difference is that gold is not recognized by the government as a lawful form of money. Back in 1933, when they took the gold out of circulation, they didn't come knocking door to door and search your house looking for it. They just took the gold out of, as the gold went through the banks, somebody deposited a $20 gold piece in the bank. They gave them 20 bucks, and then the gold went to Washington. And a year later, they said, oh, wait, the gold is now worth $35 an ounce, not $20 an ounce, which means the people have let their gold go. They took a beating. But my point is this. When the gold was part of our monetary system, the government had a different legal foundation for being able to take gold out of circulation. But since gold has been removed, it's no longer part of our monetary system. The government has no more authority to seize gold right now than it does to seize pork bellies or frozen concentrated orange juice or General Motors stock. Huh? Now, this is not to say that the government couldn't pass some sort of an executive order or perhaps a law that says, oh, you all got to go give us your gold next Tuesday. But I don't see how they're going to enforce it. And it's going to be very difficult. How do they get the gold? How do they get it? We're not in the same circumstance precisely because our gold coins are not circulating through the banking system. And for that reason, I don't think government can grab onto it. So whatever they do with prices, I don't think it's going to parallel what we saw in 33 or 34. I think the more accurate parallel is what happened in 1971 when President Richard Nixon closed the gold window and he stopped redeeming foreign-held paper dollars for physical gold. They had eliminated gold from domestic circulation in this country after 1933. Gold coins weren't available for you and me and the rest of the great unwashed. But they continued to redeem paper dollars held by foreign governments with gold. And by redeeming those paper dollars with actual gold, they established the idea that the paper dollar was good as gold. You could turn a dollar or you could turn in $35 and anytime you wanted, get an ounce of gold. And as long as that was true, everybody said, well, the dollar is good as gold. And government said, yay, we can print all the paper dollars we want because all the dummies over there in foreign countries will take our paper dollars as if they're good as gold. But President de Gaulle of France and others began to realize that the government had printed too many paper dollars, began to realize that the apparent value of the paper dollar was thereby enhanced. Oh, the dollar is good as gold, when in fact it was not. It was no longer $35 an ounce. The true free market price of gold was much higher in terms of dollars than $35 an ounce. And therefore, President de Gaulle said, I'm going to take every nickel's worth of gold I can get out of the United States government. I'm just going to take all these paper dollars, and I don't think they are good as gold, but if they're going to sell their gold at $35 an ounce, I'm going to take every ounce of gold I can get. And so he started to flood the U.S. Treasury with dollars and saying, I want gold. And President Nixon realized that if they continued to try to maintain the illusion that the price of gold was only worth $35 per ounce, they were going to lose all their gold. The gold in the treasury would be lost. So Nixon closed the gold window, and he stopped redeeming paper dollars with physical gold. And the next sound you hear is the price of gold shot up from $35 an ounce to $175 an ounce in 4 years. It increased 400% in 4 years. Why? Because you could no longer redeem paper gold or paper dollars with physical gold. The government said, sorry, we won't do that anymore. I believe that where we sit today is very similar to what was going on in 1971. We're at a point where the time has already approached, and we've seen a couple of evidence. We've seen a little bit of evidence to support the idea that the markets that are making paper gold in the form of futures contracts, they have paper gold, and they've tried to prove to everyone that the paper gold is every bit as good as the physical gold. Just as Nixon tried to argue, or the government tried to argue, that paper dollars were every bit as good as physical gold back in 1971, right now we have paper gold being pushed as if it were as good as physical gold today in the markets. Not by government per se, but in the markets. The day is approaching when the markets will not be able to redeem all of their futures contracts with physical gold. The day is already here, as near as I'm able to understand. They can't do it, but they get away with it because everyone, the majority of people, are still willing to accept paper dollars for paper gold. And they're willing to still play in the paper realm. But the moment is coming when the markets are going to have to say, we can't redeem all these paper gold certificates, these future contracts. We can't redeem them in physical. And when that moment arrives, the illusion that paper gold is as good as physical gold will be vaporized. And at that point in time, I expect to see something similar to what we saw in 1971 when the price of physical gold, as soon as they severed it and they proved that the paper gold, the paper dollar is not as good as gold, the price of physical gold went right through the roof, went up 400% in 4 years. And it's continued to do so. Here we are, what, from 1971, what, 29, 39, 42 years later? We have gone from $35 an ounce to $1,400 an ounce. An increase of something like, I'm not absolutely certain, I don't have it, some in the neighborhood of 70 times, 69, 70 times. The price has increased. It might not be that much. Try to do this math, and I used to be able to do that easily in my mind. And apparently a new math has rubbed off on me, and I know I can't rely on me to do mathematics just off the top of my head anymore. But the point is, gold has gone from $35 an ounce to $1,400 an ounce in the last 42 years. And there is nothing to suggest that trend is about to end anytime soon. You know, that's a trend. What's gold done the last week? I don't know. What's it done the last month? I don't know. What's it done the last 42 years? It's done a lot. I guess it's about, but in any case, several thousand percent that the price of gold has gone up in the past 42 years. And there's nothing to suggest that trend is going to stop in the near future. Dollar continues to go down. Paper gold will go down. Physical gold will go up. We'll have ups and downs, but trend up, up, up. These are one of the fundamentals. And it's a little hard to understand, a little hard to explain, but 71 stopped redeeming paper gold with paper dollars, they stopped redeeming paper dollars with physical gold, and the price of gold jumped 400%. I think we're close to a moment like that in our economy and our society at the moment. And it might be that we see it before the end of the year. And when we do, then the fur is going to fly. You're going to see some things happen to gold that are going to make people, those who have it, are going to be very happy campers. Those who don't are going to be very envious, jealous, and filled with remorse, sitting back and saying, you know, I could have bought gold when it was just $1,400 an ounce. I don't know what I was thinking. So, that make any sense, Melody?
Absolutely, it does. And I have a poor lady today. She's trying to decide whether she wants to buy gold or not. She thinks it's going to go down. And what happens so often is everybody gets so focused on it pulling back a few dollars, they miss the opportunity of buying it at the lower price today, so it'll go up $20, and they'll say, oh, well, it's going to come back, and then it's going to go up another $20, and then what happens is people don't get in. They figure that it's too high. They listen to all these clowns that say it's going to go to 1,100, it's going to go to 1,000, and then they miss the opportunity. So any day that you buy gold, regardless of the price, is an opportunity to preserve your purchasing power against the problems that we face in the very near future. There is a day of reckoning that is coming, and it really is up to you to make that move. We're really going against the stream because of the consensus out there is, hey, things are good. The stock market is going to be 16,000, maybe even 17,000. And that's what they're focused on. But there's a lot of discussions with Bernanke leaving, with this Yellen coming in to replace him. And you're going to have the bonds that come unglued. People are going to lose so much money in the bond market. and they will not be able to keep any all of these markets together. So the best thing that you can do right now is get involved, take a look at your portfolio, and get into gold and silver, and you can give us a call.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addis. This is Financial Survival. I'm here with Melody Cederstrom. Take a break. Be right back. Please stay tuned.
If you have a heart condition and emergency rooms and medical doctors are not an option, you need our emergency heart attack kit. 5 concentrated liquid formulas enter the system in 60 seconds to protect your heart muscle, strengthen heartbeat, increase circulation, relieve pain, and make breathing easier. When seconds count, you want all the help you can get with our emergency heart attack kit. Easy to use and portable in a 1-pound compact kit for your purse, briefcase, or car. Call Apothecary Herbs now for your emergency heart attack kit, toll free, 866-229-3663. That's 866-229-3663. International callers dial 704-875-8010 or order online at www.thepowerherbs.com.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on American Voice Radio Network and Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver, 1-800-375-4188. What else we got, Melody?
Well, we talk about how little things can turn into big things, and in Turkey, that's exactly what happened. They began as a small protest over the government's plan to build a shopping mall on Gezi Park, and it's a rare green space on the edge of this square, and it has escalated far beyond that. The Turkish stock market saw the worst fall in a whole decade. You have this Turkish unrest that is rippling across the Arab world, and you know, they've had 4 days of rioting over there. And it's just not, you know, of course, the government says it's all the extremists. You had protesters. They came in off of ferries from the Asian side of the city. And they're just not. I've read that they're business consultants. You have executives. You have lawyers. You have. It's interesting to see how that one little thing can ignite such a huge and violent situation.
You know, in retrospect, historians claim that the event that ultimately triggered World War II was the assassination of Archduke, I don't remember, Ferdinand, or I don't recall his name, but in Sarajevo, I think in the Balkans. And one guy gets shot, or assassinated, and all of a sudden the dominoes start tipping, and next thing you know, if you had World War II on your hands, it illustrates how something small and unexpected, and you can't possibly prevent it because you don't know what it is, how a very small event, when the economy, the society, the nation, the globe, when things are sufficiently unstable and they're sufficiently precarious, one little thing can just turn it and can turn the whole thing into shambles. You're talking about Turkey. Something happened in Turkey, and next thing you know, people rioted. And the riots are spreading, and in an area that's already unstable, how far is it going to go? It's absolutely conceivable that the problems we have in Turkey, for example, that domino effect could run from Turkey. By the time they're done, they could run to Japan. It could run to Washington, D.C. There's no telling where the dominoes, when the dominoes will start tip or will stop tipping. We saw the same thing in the Arab Spring just a couple of years ago. One man in, Tunisia, a peddler. He just had enough and he set himself on fire. And next thing you know, there were something like six countries, the governments were overthrown, and another dozen or so that were destabilized and threatened, and the whole world flipped just because, ultimately, because one little guy set himself on fire. That's not something that you can't defend against that government. And the point we've made on this program repeatedly is that the whole world seems to be vibrating like the old glass in the Memorex commercials just before it shatters. And maybe it's going to shatter and maybe it's not, but we can see the vibration, we can see the instability, and so we sit back and wonder, will there be one of these peculiar events?
Well, you know, they call it a culture war, and of course the prime minister, he was elected back in, I think, 2002, 2004, and, you know, he's trying to make changes, and, you know, he is bringing slowly and gradually, he says he isn't, but Islamic law. And, of course, this is, he's been in the office, I guess, for a decade, and he has said that he has proved that he has no intention of taking steps to impose Islamic law. However, the changes that he's making, people are, there is this conflict between the two. So
he's the weight of public sentiment there in Turkey is in favor of the Islamic law. Turkey's trying to be a secular nation.
Yes.
But the Muslims are becoming increasingly active and insistent, and in the end, the politicians have to give in. They have to go, you know, they can resist. But if the tide of Muslim activism persists, then the government will ultimately have to yield to that tide. It's going to have to yield to that force. If it's big enough, they will move in that direction. And when they do, they will become less secular, and from some people's perspective, less reasonable. And then where are you? You know, we've had that incident in, Great Britain? Where a couple of Muslims chopped some soldier into chunks.
Yep.
Back about 10 days ago, thereabouts. You get enough of that, you have enough of that influence in your country, and you have to presume you're going to see some very serious demonstrations, maybe some violence, and how's it all going to work out? The government can't really deal with these problems. You know, you and I sit back and say, well, if they have a problem, the government will step in. I don't know that the government has the resources. They have created problems that are so big and so massive and so inherent in our system and our society that it may be that when these problems really blossom, government comes back and golly, you know, it's like Frankenstein. They create these little monsters from time to time. And initially it seems pretty cool to, you know, put the electricity in there and get the thunderbolt to hit him, and all of a sudden, the creature is walking. Hey, that's cool. Yeah, but wait until the creature starts raiding the villages. Right? Wait until he starts killing some of the villagers, and all of a sudden you're going to see the peasants storm up to the castle with pitchforks and flaming torches and the rest of that, and they're going to say, we had enough of your scientific experiments, Baron Frankenstein, and we've got to put an end to it. Governments like that. They have created a bunch of problems in this country that will not be easily resolved, and many of them can't be resolved at all, and all they can do is try to avoid that day of reckoning. Because when we get there, it'll be a bunch of angry campers, not just unhappy campers, but potentially angry campers, and government's not looking forward to that. So, again, we live in unstable times. What do? You protect yourself as best you can.
Here's the question. How can a president enact legislation via an executive order or any other piece of paper? Congress enacts legislation. If we haven't stroke of the pen law of the land, then we are a dictatorship, aren't we? Don't we?
Well, I agree with what they're saying, and the answer to me appears to be extraordinarily surprising. And it's the sort of thing that the average person would say, that's crazy, it can't possibly be. All right? And they may be correct. I believe that what we're seeing, and I can't prove it, and I could be mistaken, but where we need law and Congress makes certain laws and we think of ourselves as living within the borders of states of the Union. We think of ourselves as living within the state of Oregon, within the state of Texas, within the state of Pennsylvania. Within those states, there are the federal government has only limited ability to reach in and do anything. Limited powers within the states. But it appears probable, likely, and I'm certainly not the only person who believes this, although we are a tiny minority. But there's some very intelligent people that believe that what's happened is the government is operating on the presumption that we are no longer, that you and I do not inhabit a state of the Union. Instead, we occupy a territory. Instead of living in the state of Texas, we're in the territory of Texas. Instead of being in the state, meaning state of the Union, of Oregon, we're within the territory of Oregon. And the reason this is significant is within the territory, the Congress can do anything it wants. It has unlimited legislative jurisdiction within the territories. And it says so at Article 4, Section 3, Clause 2. And I might be mistaken at that, but I believe it's Article 4 of the Constitution of the United States. The Congress has unlimited legislative jurisdiction in the territories. They can do whatever they want in the territories. And if they want to grant some of their powers to the president, the president can do virtually anything he wants within the territories. Now, I know this is a fantastic idea because what it amounts to is the government has created an alternative and fictional venue for the people. They say, oh, we think you're in the territories. They don't say it out loud. But they presume we've moved from the territory, from the states of the Union into territories. They presume we have consented. Under those circumstances, we've lost a great deal of rights. We've lost a great deal of freedom and liberty. And when President Obama, for example, passes an executive order, I think that executive order, I strongly suspect, I can't prove it, I could be mistaken, but I strongly suspect that his executive order only applies in territories. I don't think it applies within the states of the Union. It applies within Washington, D.C. It applies within the territories. I don't think it applies within the states of the Union. Now, is that theory valid? Don't know. Does it make any sense? It does, kind of. For this, one of the big reasons is Article 1, Section 10, Clause 1 of the Constitution of the United States says, no state shall make anything but gold and silver coin a tender in payment of debts. It says no state, and it means no state of the Union. And what it implies is that no state of the Union, it's not only that they can't declare anything other than gold or silver to be tender and payment of debts, it implies that no government of a state of the union can function without gold or silver coin. They can't impose fines unless those fines are assessed in terms of gold or silver. They can't impose taxes. They can't pay their help. They are rendered insolvent if there's no gold or silver coin in circulation under Article 1, Section 10, Clause 1. There's no gold or silver coin in circulation. What do we have for government at the state level? Are they really governments of the states of the union, or are they something else? And part of the reason we suspect they are presumed to be, it's a legal fiction, we think maybe, they are presumed to be territories because they don't have any gold or silver yet left. They are functioning with Federal Reserve notes. And the Constitution doesn't say that we have to have gold and silver across the board. It says no states shall make gold and silver coin a tender in payment of debt, but Washington, D.C. could use things other than gold or silver coin. They can use Federal Reserve notes within Washington, D.C. They can use them. They can use Federal Reserve notes within the territories. We think people who look at this, and some of them I know, a retired professor of economics who's been crucial to advancing and exploring this idea. And there's others that are coming around. This isn't a new idea. It's at least a decade old. We think maybe that's what's happening. It's a strange idea. It's a fantastic idea. It's an idea. And if it were true, it would be evidence that the government is committing treason against the people of the states of the union. And yet you look at it and you look at it and you look at it again and you see it does quack like a duck, you know. It walks like a duck. Goes good with orange sauce. Are we looking at ducks? And we are led to suspect strongly that we're looking at ducks. We think the government is treating us as if we're in a territory rather than within a state of the union. Maybe that's certainly a confused explanation, but it might be correct. It might be roughly correct. And, you know, hope it makes a little sense to whoever put that question to us earlier today, Baldy.
Yes, and I think we're just about out of time, are we not?
We have about a minute and 4 seconds.
That long, huh?
Uh-huh, that long, which it's not quite long enough to sing a complete song. All right.
On the other hand,
it's too long to just go completely silent.
Well,
we've got to do something, hopefully something intelligent.
Well, we can talk about China briefly, reaping the biggest benefits of of the oil boom. And, of course, I think in May they had, 1,000 killed in violence in Iraq.
Which raises what question? Will China be able to extract, is Iraq so explosive that China's efforts to get crude oil out of Iraq, will it succeed or will China's efforts fail just because Iraq has become there on the verge of another civil war? Now what? China's investing, trying to get oil out of there, but in the midst of a revolution or a civil war. How do you extract oil? We'll perhaps talk a little more about that tomorrow. I want to thank all of you for listening. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cedarstrom. Back tomorrow. Meantime, may the good Lord bless you, me, Melody, and Frank, the producer.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. I work all night, I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay. Ain't it sad? And still there never seems to be a single penny left for me.